Hi, and welcome to Soul Centered. My name is Ariella Halevi, and Soul Centered is a center for spirituality, meaning, and healing for the afternoon of life. And I am the co-founder of Soul Centered and also the director of healing. I'm here with my husband, Baruch Halevi.
Hey, all, welcome. Welcome to the Soul Centered podcast. We're very excited to be bringing you this new format that we decided to venture out on and going to be bringing to you soul-centered conversations periodically. So very excited that you have joined us and very also ready to introduce to you the topic of today. Should we get going?
Yeah, let's go.
Great. So we decided we wanted to do a series called Om Your Power. I know that's a very cute name and it's original. I actually Googled it. I can't find anything else out there that says Om Your Power. So we should like
very original.
We should put on t-shirts. I'd actually buy that t-shirt.
Great idea.
So Om Your Power is about just that, oming your power, right? Finding your power in a world that feels right now like all the power is out there, out of our control, and we can feel powerless. During COVID, it's been a time that's really challenged us in owning our power and what is ours to own and what's not ours to own, certainly with the protests and all of the unrest out there. It's a time we can feel very vulnerable and powerless. And so we wanted to have this conversation to give you tools that we use. I don't think you teach anything. I know I don't teach anything that I don't personally use.
Absolutely. I think we have to use it in our daily lives to be able to teach it.
Yeah. So, you know, everything we're sharing with you is just what's gotten us through. It's been tested, battle tested, and still tested. We're in it right there with you. So we're going to walk through six tools, ways to approach this issue of reclaiming your power. And I really believe deeply that that's the work we both do, is each of us in our own ways, working with clients to take back their power, because it's so easy, unconsciously, subconsciously, even consciously, to give it away.
Right. And to live an empowered life is really, it reminds me of these six pillars, because when you're doing all these six things that we're going to talk about, you change, making small changes in your life, daily small changes, allows you to then look back and see, wow, you know, I really have made the changes. And it makes you feel like, A, really proud of yourself that you can do this, and B, empowered that not only can you be a role model for others, and we're going to talk about that in one of our six pillars, but also that you have the power to change your life.
Yeah, and it's so important that, you know, these things happen incrementally and organically and slowly over time. It's too often we think of these as big epiphany moments, right, out in the world, a calling and a knowing and a change of life direction, where, at least in my experience, it's the subtle daily interactions with ourselves and with the world that's the real impactful, sustainable change.
I agree. I also think COVID is this really interesting time where it was actually, I think, at least for some of our clients and for the people that we've been in touch with, that it's actually been one of those big booms of life. You know, it was such a big impact on all of us. Like, you're going to look back in this time and you're going to say, and a lot of us do this, are you talking about pre-COVID, post-COVID, present COVID?
I wish it was post-COVID.
Yeah. Which COVID are we talking about? Stay at home, safer at home?
But that's, and I guess you're taking us into the conversation because, yeah, those are big, hopefully once in a lifetime, but monumental external circumstances. But there will always be those big external circumstances. You know, I'm talking about, and I think you are too, that the inner change isn't always a big booming voice, isn't always a larger than life out-of-body experience, religious epiphany, right? Moses on the mountaintop. The external circumstances oftentimes feel that way, but the internal changes, I think, are much more daily, sustainable, incremental, and slow.
Right. I think about just a brief personal history that we had is when we moved to Israel, we picked up and left almost everything behind, and we moved ourselves and our four kids to Israel. That was a big moment. That was like a huge life shift. It was one of those things when you look back and you think, what were those big booms in your life? And that was one of them. But then the smaller incremental shifts happen from that big boom over the 3 years that we lived there.
Yeah, that's another conversation for another day. That's like drinking from a fire hose, trying to get a drink and you're still thirsty afterwards. It's a lot all at once. All right, I think that's a funny analogy. So we're good.
So true.
So you didn't know this is a spiritual channel conversation and also a comedy show. So welcome.
A husband and wife comedy show.
So let's get into it. In the remaining time that we have, and I don't know what kind of time that is because nobody's told us the rules. We could just go all day. We're going to talk about the six tools of Om, and they all start with M. That's why I called them Om. But they're really placeholders, conceptual, and we could really get into the nuances of it, and we will. But let's just think of them, and I'll say them out loud right now as an overview, and then Ariel, you can take us into it. So Om your power during a time, whatever time that might be, of feeling powerless. Number one, make time, right? And set aside time. We're going to get into what that means. Number two, meditation, an emptying process. We'll get into that. Number three, mindfulness, almost the opposite of emptying, but a kind of a filling up. Number four, really Ariella's area of specialty, movement. Number five, manifestation. And number six, meaning. And because we love you so much, we made a infographic, and I'll make that available in the show notes, and I'll put it up on the website so you can download your handy dandy six steps to Om your power.
So let's take the first one, making time. Wayne Dyer said it so well when he talked about this idea of the idea that we are not human doings, but we are human beings. And life is about making time and making space for what is important. And when we are too busy and when we are running from and disembodied, which we'll get to, most of us live from our head up. So this causes us to be human doings instead of human beings. And making time for ourselves is, and even in the smallest increments, by the way, is all about being a human being. This idea that most people, most of us live in our minds, right? We live from our head up. And this is the cause of the lack of time we feel we have. So when we live in our minds, we let our minds take over, and it doesn't usually lead us in the right places. But when we make time to live inside our spirit, then we are actually human beings.
I don't think we could get through a podcast or a Facebook Live or a blog without referencing Wayne Dyer. I don't think we actually ever have. I'd say if you said, you know, name your guy, your teacher, your rabbi, whatever you want to call him, right? We would both have to come down to, if we can only have one, like just one.
He was the first.
Wayne Dyer.
Yeah.
So since he's already been referenced, I won't reference him, but I will reference this idea of the Kabbalah talks about, Jewish mysticism talks about the idea of zman, which in Hebrew is time, but it's also zimun, which is invitation. And thinking about time as an invitation, right? I mean, because isn't that, that's all we have. At the end of the day, all we have is time. It's actually all we have is now. And so making, you know, the power of now, making time means taking the invitation. You don't make time. Like, it's actually kind of stupid if you think about it. How do you make time? It's the one thing we can't make. Probably a better way to say it is entering into time or being present, right? Which will take us into meditation in a moment, but setting aside that time to do this work, because one of the things I see over and over again, I've seen it over 20 years of being a spiritual guide, is lots of times people will describe a spirituality, but they don't do anything with it. It's like a feeling, which is great, but what do? Right? Say, tell your kids, I love you. I just don't make time for you. Like, see how that flies. It doesn't add up. If you want to show your kids you love them or whomever, you have to dedicate time. And so to me, that's step one in oming your power, is making time in your day. And it doesn't have to be hours on end. It could be 5 minutes in the morning. I like a 20 or 30 minute period of time in the morning. I make that time. And I guess the other piece of this is making time. Ariel, you know that story about the college professor who has the rocks and the pebbles? Mm-hmm. So maybe you don't know it at home when you're listening. There's this college professor, and he's just teaching on values and prioritizing. And he has rocks and pebbles and sand and water all up on the counter, and says, make them fit into this jar. And, you know, there really doesn't seem to be a way to do it because everybody does different combinations. The only way all that fits in is if you put the rocks in first, right? And then the pebbles and then the sand and then the water. But the point is the rocks are the essential things in your life. And if you don't make time for the rocks, then they'll never fit into the jar.
Well, if you think about using the mind and letting the mind take over in terms of your time, you can fill your calendar with all the to-do lists and all the many, many things that we have in this busy world.
Like the pebbles.
Right. Those are all the things in your mind. Those are, I mean, some of them are very important things. We have to go to work. We have to pay the bills. But if we don't put, you know, like you said, Zaman, the invitation of time into our calendars of the being. Like we put on our calendar almost every weekend since COVID started, we put in the calendar hiking. So if we don't, if it's not in the calendar, it doesn't exist because that's just the world we live in. But it is a carved out space of time. It's a sanctuary. It's saying to you, it's making yourself important enough to put yourself on your calendar to make time.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's really putting the rocks in the jar. It's making time. And you know, that takes us into where we are. I guess this won't be evergreen because I'm talking about time, but it's still, there'll always be vacation. Summer vacation, at least in America, in the Western Hemisphere. We are really in the midst of this idea of vacation. I love this word. I love language and really getting to the essence of these words that we just throw around. Vacation means what? Going on a cruise. I guess in this day and age, it doesn't mean going on a cruise, but vacation, to vacate, to leave behind, right? You vacate your normal routines to create space and time and to get into a different headspace. And so thinking about, you know, meditation as making time for what? Not just for any old thing, but here are some other things you can do inside that time. And one of them is to vacate the normal rhythms and routines.
Right. I love what Rabbi Alan Liu says about meditation. And sometimes that word meditation is quite scary to people. But the whole idea of meditation, like Baruch said, is vacating, but he talks about it as leave-taking, right? So there's many stories, Kabbalistic stories that we could talk about this idea that to find your still small voice, or whatever you call it, you may call it spirit, you may call it God, you may call it the divine, your soul, to find the part of you that speaks your truth, that speaks your, that has your highest good inside of you, to find it, we have to leave. We have to create a barrier, a sanctuary, really, just like time, around a certain amount of time to go into a place that is vacating, right? It is that vacation, but it's right in the center of the chaos of your own life.
Yeah, and it's an elevated place. Einstein says you can't create your problems on the level you've you can't solve your problems on the level you've created them, right? You need to back out of your challenges, your problems, the world to get clear. And everybody knows this. It's like, you know, duh, we know this. You come back refreshed if you've gone on a proper vacation. And that doesn't mean setting sail or going to exotic places. It means having emptied, right? Our brains, our world is so full, like Ariella said, human doings. And so we create space, make time to not do, but to be present and to be okay with not doing. Blaise Pascal once said, I've discovered that all unhappiness of human beings arises from one single fact. They cannot stay quietly in their own inner chamber. They can't be okay just being quiet. Meditation is just being okay being quiet.
Carolyn Mace, an author and medical intuitive, talks a lot about the chambers inside of us, and that the inability to stay quiet and go deeper inside of us prevents us from discovering the deep recesses and beauty inside of us. We are not just skin and bones and the physical. It's not just, this life isn't just what you see is what you get. And she talks a lot about these rooms inside of your soul. So the more quiet we can get, the more we can stay still, the more we can access these divine connections, this calling that we have inside of us, the still small voice within us.
Yeah, and those chambers are places to discover, right? You know, I'm working with people in the afternoon of life. You shift from external outward discovery to internal, inner discovery. And there's a whole world within us that has just been covered over or neglected. We've been just so busy providing and doing all these wonderful things of the morning, and they're important things to do, but oftentimes to the neglect of the inner life and these inner chambers, and to be working with people in the afternoon of life to discover one of those inner chambers. It's like the greatest thing in the world. When you see the light bulb go off, and it's like this aha, like I had no idea that. You know, most of my clients, if they're female, we talk about their soul as she. Like we just end up talking about her and she, and they start discovering her. And you can just see they start developing this relationship with her for the first time in many ways. And it comes in the quiet stillness because she's quiet.
She is. I mean, this is what I call the divine feminine, right? Discovering, and that's in males and females and all of the above. So divine feminine doesn't mean that you're a female and you discover her. You can discover her in any body that you live in. The divine feminine tends to be, I think of her as a lion. You know, she's quiet and she's intuitive and she's strong and she will lash out if pushed, but she has this inner direction. She knows where she's going and how to get there because she can access it from a really deep place from within her.
I think of Untamed by Glennon Doyle.
Yeah.
Right. And the opening of it is basically this cheetah that's just been tamed, mm-hmm. right? And the sadness and the sorrow of watching a tamed cheetah, and, you know, her response to this cheetah was like this response I see guiding people, especially women in the afternoon of life, that, you know, her line was, you know, you're a goddamn cheetah. Like, wake
right.
up.
Right.
And she discovers that in her life. And I see that in the people that we work with. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a cheetah. And right. I have that power in me. And then you start paying attention to it. And I guess that takes us into the third om. It's making time and it's meditation, right? Kind of emptying out and making space. Maybe that's a good way to think of it. Like taking time and making space. And then what do you fill that space back up with?
Right.
You know, I don't think the point is to live on a mountaintop and say om, 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 which is just, it's something and it's an important thing, but it's not the only thing. Then you fill it back up, right? I teach a lot about emptying our cup so that we can choose what goes back in the cup. And that's mindfulness, the third step.
And mindfulness is really, I sat with this one and I really thought about it. And mindfulness is really about present moment awareness. Mindfulness is I think actually one of the most challenging pillars that we're talking about today, because when you have present moment awareness, it means that whatever arises, you are present to. So it's beautiful to be present when you have the birth of your child, or when beautiful, wonderful things are going on and your life is flowing and your body feels great and everything is good. But the challenge and what we both work with clients is, can you be in the present moment when life is difficult, when you don't know what is going to happen tomorrow? If you think about the COVID situation, we don't know what will be. It's very hard to sit in this present moment when you're trying to plan for your future and you literally can't. But present moment awareness or mindfulness is all about feeling what arises.
Right. And it ain't always pretty. And no. That's especially when you have to pay attention. And you're absolutely right. We think of mindfulness, right? I feel like it's like some brochure for a day spa, you know, retreat, like come be mindful for the day. And
I have to say one thing. I was reading a few articles about mindfulness, and they said, now we all have to wash our hands for 20 seconds. So, and I'm not knocking this, but during those 20 seconds, you can be grateful and gracious that you're washing your hands and the act of washing your hands. And I'm all about washing your hands and taking that space in between, in the minutiae of your life. But all I can think about is when I wash my hands is, what is going on in our world? How did we get there?
You know, we could swear because it's our podcast. Right? She's got a mouth like a truck driver.
I do, but I'm trying to be kind.
We want a G rating.
It's like, what the hell? I don't feel gracious that I'm washing my hands. I feel gracious that I'm alive and healthy.
Like, who said mindfulness is That little kitty from the Lego movie who walks around going, you know, it's all bubbles and roses and bubble gum and right. candy. And then she blows her freaking top at the end. And like, I think about like, what, it's just as mindful to say, I'm effing pissed that I have to wash my hands because I went out and people weren't wearing masks and it's irresponsible. And I had to deal with their consequences of their irresponsibility. And I'm washing my hands extra hard and it's scrubbing them and I'm not happy about it. But I'm paying attention to that. Right. That's mindful.
Or like, you know, a few weeks ago and beyond, like I'm effing pissed that I'm wiping down every single solitary grocery in my garage before I bring my bags in and my stuff and my food in. It's like, so mindfulness is about feeling your emotions. It's about being in the present moment, and it's not, you know, lollipops and candy all the time. Sometimes it is, and like eat those up and be excited and feel that joy inside your body like nothing else. But when rage and terror and fear and sadness and grief comes up, feel that sadness, grief, etc., just like you would feel it fully through to joy. So feel it through. Be pissed if you're pissed. Be sad if you're sad. Give yourself space to cry.
But the flip side is, so yes, we're all on agreement. Like this is not a, you know, silly spirituality. Like we believe deeply in going into the shadows and looking at it and facing it and holding it, right? That's what it means in Hebrew, the word patience, savlanut, means suffering. And it's what is patience? It's holding the suffering, right? Compassion means to suffer with somebody. Compassion. You enter in the space and you stay there even when it's uncomfortable. And you do that by recognizing it's uncomfortable. And I want to run, right? People hate going to Shiva homes or wakes. They do, and oftentimes they'll avoid it. I know because I did 500 funerals, and I heard over and over the people who didn't show up. They never didn't show up because of maliciousness. It was too painful for them to hold the moment. And you know what we teach people is hold the feelings. Don't be dominated by the feelings. Own your feelings. And that means, you know, what Blaise Pascal, another quote by him, says, clarity of mind means clarity of passion. This is why a great and clear mind loves ardently and sees distinctly what he loves. I love this because passions they should be felt, but they don't have to dominate us. If they do, then they own us. We don't owe them. And I think of a Kabbalist, the Koritza rabbi, who says, I conquered my anger long ago, and I keep it in my pocket. That way, when I need it, I take it out. And there's a time for anger, right? I need it. But I don't want to be used by my anger. I want to use my anger.
Well, and that's what owning your power, like living an empowered life doesn't mean that you are on a leash and your emotions are the leader of your walk here in life. So owning your power and an empowered life means that you feel the feeling in the present moment of what is coming up and you own it. And when it leaves, you let it go.
That's right. It doesn't own you.
Right. It doesn't own you. But, you know, the truth is nothing should own us.
And that's the whole point of this.
And that's the whole point of that previous one, meditation, is like really finding that sanctuary or those chambers inside of us, the divine feminine, whatever you want to call it, allows us to be empowered because we know who we are and we trust ourselves.
That's right. And so we take back our power. We own our power. Again, just recapping, make time. And number two, meditation. And number three, mindfulness. And number four. Number four takes us also into such an important and overlooked spiritual practice, which is an embodied spirituality. You know, it isn't just sitting in meditation and divorcing yourself from the world. It's actually being a part of the world. And part of the world, in fact, all of the world is movement. Everything is in motion. The earth is in motion. Our lives are in motion. We're never completely still. So thinking about movement mindfully as a way to own your power.
Right. I mean, to me, movement, there's a lot of talk about movement as exercise. And so I like to put exercise on the side. Exercise is something you do to sometimes definitely, obviously, to be in your body. When we take long jogs together, you know, we feel like we are embodied in that feeling when you get, when you run and, or when you exercise, that is definitely a piece of this embodied experience. Another piece of the embodied experience is to, is to see your body as a home for the soul. Embodiment as movement, as embodiment, is to move sometimes, to move in the way your body wants to move, to listen to your body and talk to it and speak to it as if it was a friend, someone that you loved. I always say that, like, in order to find that movement in a busy lifetime, like, can you make small embodiment movements? I'm a yoga teacher, and starting in COVID, we were really not online before, and now we're fully online. So on our soul-centered website, there's a lot of movement and embodiment moves, yoga for your body, for your soul. But I never teach yoga as a physical practice. The outcome is that you feel open and your body feels stronger and better and more energized. But the purpose of, let's say, yoga or anything else that you feel that is good for movement, the purpose truly of yoga is to open up spaces, recesses inside of your body to access your spirit and your soul.
If I could do this over, and I guess I can do it over, I'd rename this one material, because, you know, this is the philosopher piece and this is not a philosophical necessarily show, but material and spiritual are oftentimes juxtaposed, where you do spirituality or you do materialism. And what I think what we're saying in this one is that an authentic spirituality, right? Soul is not either or, it's both and. There is soul in material, right? I'm holding right now my father's toy soldier from when he grew up. It's a little bronze soldier. And it's one of the last physical things I have of his. And I hold it and I can feel him. To me, it's a portal or pathway into soul to think about the material things around us. And our body's a material thing, right? And so thinking about how can we meet the divine, not only in an ethereal, non-material way, but body and movement and physicality is a pathway in.
I love this quote by Megan Watterson. She says, "Your body is the soul's address in this lifetime. It's where you live. From the moment you are born in a physical form to the moment you die, your body is what makes the human experience possible. When we reconnect with this truth, we can remember to see the body as a temple, a threshold to the sacred, and an embodiment of the love from which we are created." So exactly what Baruch is saying, what you're saying, Baruch, is it's not I'm doing body movements and then I'm connecting to my spirit on the other hand. What if movement was a form of embodiment where you accessed the divine in this way through some sort of movement? And sometimes it's just the smallest of movements, as I said, but it's some sort of way to enter your spirit.
That's right. So there are different pathways into this place of soul. And what we're exploring are different paths during times when it feels like we don't have choice, right? When we're victims of circumstance and we're being thrown about in the turbulent waters of COVID or protests or you name it, there will always be something outside of ourselves. And thinking, really deepening our toolbox, right, that it isn't just, oh, checking out and going to a mountaintop. That can be a part of it. Or it can also be paying attention, or it can be utilizing our body, our kli, as they say in Kabbalah, our vessel to touch on the divine. And that takes us into this intersection between spiritual and material. And again, Wayne Dyer, lots of people talk about it, but I go to Wayne Dyer for this one. Manifestation, manifesting. Now, I have issues with manifesting, I got to say, because I think it's a slippery slope into flimsy and narcissistic New Ageism, and I have my challenges with that. But I think manifesting done right and done responsibly is a beautiful idea. You want to talk about manifesting?
Yes, because it's funny. I was reading an article today by Jen Mazur. She's the queen of manifestation, and she had a good point. Like, manifesting is really about thinking about those things when you have connected. So it can be flimsy, but it can also be really beautiful. Mm-hmm. When you've connected to your spirit through, let's say, movement, meditation, being in the present moment and making time for yourself, then you are clear enough to think about the things that you want. Not, I want a new car for the sake of wanting a new car. But if you think about the things in your life that you would like to manifest, I want a deeper relationship with this person. I want to spend quality time in the mountains and get an RV or whatever it is. It instead of it coming from a a mind place, it can come from a soul place. And then the key to manifestation is to not just jot some things down on a piece of paper and never look at them again. It's to really sit with and look at what you want to create in this lifetime. You're a creator. Mm-hmm. We are co-creators with the divine within us, right? So it's about feeling. Like, what are you going to feel like when you get an RV next year, next summer?
And I think I'm getting an RV, people. Think I'm getting an RV.
Uh-huh. And when you get that RV and you could take your four kids around and you can go to Yosemite and Yellowstone and all over the Colorado mountains, how are you going to feel?
Can I manifest a solo trip?
Doesn't that make you feel excited?
Yeah, I'm sweating. I'm manifesting so hard. So yes, absolutely. I like it because it's a paradigm shift. And I do believe it was Dr. Dyer who said, you know, we live in a world where normally I'll believe it when I see it, right? Show me the proof. And the opposite is manifesting. You'll see it when you believe it, right? Because it's true. I you don't have to get woo-woo on this for my, you know, like I coach a lot of executive types.
Or who, you can.
You can. Nothing wrong with woo-woo. Some of my best
Your wife.
Are woo-woo. But it works in both worlds. It works in a very material, pragmatic, intellectual world too. Why? Absolutely. Because I forgot, it was Plato. Somebody said, we don't have ideas. Ideas have us. Why do you think you built the new startup or the new company or did XYZ? You know, did you create it? Or is there an idea that you latched onto, an energy? Ideas are energy. And you really are the midwife of that idea. You brought it into existence. Now, your diligence, your efforts, your energy, you know, our Arab brothers and sisters say, have faith in God and tie up your camels, right? You do the work. You don't just say, God, you know, build this company for me. But the idea, you're harnessing it and you're bringing it forth and giving it life. That's a manifestation process. And that is a powerful reality.
It absolutely. It's not just sitting back and say, I want X, Y, and Z. Like if you're creating something, then you have to follow it up with the steps to get there. So what in your life do you have to let go of to make some room for the things in life that you are manifesting?
That's right.
What in your life do you have to, what steps do you have to take along the way? I think of it as like, if you bring it back up to one of the M's, like it's meditation, it's mindfulness. Okay, so if my goal is way over here,
it's movement too. You gotta
It's movement.
Move your butt.
So it's all about taking the steps and then relying on something deeper than yourself than just what you see to show you the steps. Like Baruch and I talk a lot about synchronicities and looking for the signs. Or maybe I just talk about that now.
I talk about it.
In my practice, what we work on is opening our eyes enough and getting clear enough to see the messages and signs that the angels and guides and the divine bring us every single day, because they're always here. But those are little pebble stones on the way to the big gift of what you manifested.
That's right. And you know, what do you have, like something like 80,000 thoughts a day, whatever it is, and most of them are repetitive.
Right.
And a good percentage, I don't know what it is, are destructive, mm-hmm. right, or negative and can lead to destruction. And so, you know, it's also, manifestation is also really getting your, you know, getting your ducks in a row, getting your stuff together, making room through all these other tools, as Ariella said, make room in your head, harness your thoughts, get an alignment. And I love this word alignment, right? And so that you can live in the direction that bringing all this energy together so that it works in unison and in alignment to take you towards your dreams, because you can't go in 80,000 directions. And so it's about becoming responsible, which is an interesting thing to me, that for me, manifestation is about taking responsibility for all the internal happenings, because I can't really deal with all the external happenings.
Right. I mean, maybe that takes us to our last M in our OM sequence, which is meaning. And, you know, as you said, it's taking responsibility and taking action in your life. So it's not just about manifesting that new car, which is great, but it's also taking responsibility and to respond to life and find your meaning, and to also to think about, you know, the things that I want to create in my life, the things that I'm doing in my life, do they bring meaning to myself, to others? Ultimately, you know, a lot of what you talk about, Baruch, is leaving a legacy. It's creating a legacy. to me, meaning is legacy.
Yeah, and you nailed it. It's making mindful, conscious choices to what to manifest. And Dr. Frankl, who I'm a student of, I'm a logotherapist, and he created logotherapy, meaning-centered therapy, said that, you know, in order to truly touch on the spirit, the soul, we have to self-transcend. It can't be about us. It doesn't mean we should neglect ourselves or put ourselves second. Sometimes we have to put ourselves at the center, self-centering as the most responsible thing to do. But it can't be that we are the end. We are a means to bring goodness and love and possibility into this world. So why are we doing all of this? And really, this is the meaning part, is getting clear about our why, right? And Nietzsche says, she who has a big enough why can endure any how. So it's really about getting clear during this whole process, each one of these steps, why must I own my power? Because it's not about me. It's about those who are around me. It's about those who have come before me and honoring them. And it's about those who come after me and paving the way to go a little bit farther so they can go a little bit farther and then they can go a little bit farther.
And last week on Facebook Live, we talked a lot about legacy and leaving a meaning. And it is about paving the way for those that come after us. We talked a lot, we won't get into it now, but we talked a lot about generational trauma and healing, taking the responsibility. I mean, talk about meaning, taking the responsibility in your life to heal the things that have been passed down to you. And some of those are beautiful things and we want to continue those. And then the generational, there's a lot of generational trauma that we all carry. And to take responsibility for that, to choose responsibility for being the soul, that one person who says, no, I'm going to heal this piece. You know, I think about our kids and the things that I want to leave, not behind, you know, not only when I pass away, God willing, in 120 years, but also the meaning that I want to infuse in their lives right now. The biggest thing that you can leave behind or leave to anybody that you surround yourself with is to heal yourself. It's to heal those pieces in you that hurt. It's to make time for these six M's, the owning your power, because ultimately this is a healing path.
And it's not just leaving a legacy. I help people shift to thinking, and I really hadn't thought about this before either, is living our legacy, right? Yes. Why wait till we're gone to leave the legacy? Live your legacy. And that means that in the face of chaos and tumult and tumultuous times, when the external circumstances are out of our control, and guess what? News break, they're always out of our control, that the only thing we can control is our response, right? Dr. Frankl makes the note of responsible, response-able, the ability to respond, not react. If we don't own our power, we end up reacting to every wave that comes crashing in. But what we're talking about in owning your power is being response able. And that comes down to a choice. This is the last of human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. I just did that by memory. Dr. Frankl says, that's what we're talking about. To choose your response regardless of the external circumstances, to choose your own way.
I totally agree.
And so with that, those are the six steps in owning your power. I'm sure there'll be more steps later, but for now, we're going to call it a day there. We're so honored and delighted that you all took the time to tune in and check us out. We hope you listen to the other podcasts that we're starting to put up there. We also have a YouTube channel, and you can get all of this at mysoulcenter.org.
Namaste and shalom, and stay tuned for more.
Take care. Peace. Bye-bye.